the MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to the MadTech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest from the worlds of media, marketing and e-commerce. I'm John Still, ExchangeWire's Head of Content. And in this week's episode, we're going to break from our usual analysis of the news and instead discuss some of our predictions for 2023. Joining me for some near future gazing this week are ExchangeWire COO Lindsay Rowntree. Lindsay, welcome.
Hello.
Kieran O'Kane, CSO. Welcome, Kieran.
Hello, John.
And joining us from the ad tech capital of Australia, Canberra, ExchangeWire CEO Rachel Smith.
Hello. Yes, it's true, listeners. I had an ad tech meeting in Canberra this week. Check that out. People are now currently going, I know Canberra's the capital. Let me work out what ad tech businesses have got offices there.
We're starting a new trend. You've set the groundwork for Canberra's rise to ad tech prominence now.
The government's going to be very pleased with me.
Delighted.
You buy free dope there, so it's about marijuana ad tech probably.
You can buy free dope.
You can't buy free sentence. Dope is legal. How would you buy free dope?
Exactly.
It's an oxymoronic thing.
Decriminalized. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You can grow it and
smoke
use it.
Legally.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Fascinating place, Canberra.
You can get high and optimize in Canberra.
Let's get off Canberra because we'll have now ostracized the entire Australian listenership that are like, I can't believe they're talking about Canberra, right?
Let's get that on the edit list. So
the world's going, where the hell's Canberra?
What is Canberra? For this podcast, I've asked each of you to send me over two of your predictions for what's going to be making the news in the industry in 2023. We've got some really interesting stuff coming up, some interesting thoughts on what next year is going to bring, and there's some overlap. So I think we'll start with CTV, which, Lindsay, you made one of your bolder predictions about the future of CCTV. It will be the year of CTV. For the next 10 years was your thought. Let me know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think we're in mobile territory, 100%. Everyone's talking about CTV, but I feel like CTV is being talked about more than it's actually being done. And there's a lot to unpick. There's obviously, undeniably huge opportunity in the CTV space. Like, let's not beat around the bush, you know, and with the likes of Netflix and Disney going ad-funded. Netflix hasn't had the best start at going ad-funded in terms of it's not had the viewership it needs, it's not got the supply it needs yet. Advertiser demand certainly there, but having to give advertisers money back because they are not getting their campaigns aren't hitting targets. We're only a few weeks in. It started in November. This will take time to build, and Netflix haven't aggressively pushed it. But you know, it's not the best start to kind of the premium ad-funded model. Disney need to look and take note as to kind of how this is working. But I think that there's a lot of positivity around CTV, which is great. It's important. But I think that the challenges that will arise around CTV are kind of being ignored, and they shouldn't be. Because if people want to seriously look at investing in CTV, they need to understand the challenges and pitfalls around it, as well as what the opportunities bring. And in terms of, you know, there are targeting opportunities, definitely, but also targeting challenges. How do you target CTV? Linear TV is normally targeted contextually. The measurement piece comes up, you know, when it comes to targeting. And how people, advertisers that are used to targeting and buying linear TV, how they then translate that into a CTV environment. When it comes to measurement, should we be measuring on viewability, measuring on attention? Kind of what do the programmatic measurement KPIs that have performed so well and that we're now looking to evolve, what do they look like in the CTV space? And I think that I was looking at the predictions that we published on ExchangeWire, and Nicola Teague from the Seven Stars has said that she's rooting for long tail CTV channels because there's huge opportunity in the long tail, certainly for smaller advertisers that will be able to target efficiently. My concern then comes around fraud. And I think there'll be a lot of fraud in CTV generally, because fraud tends to follow ad spend. And as ad spend in CTV increases massively, we're going to see a lot of fraud. We're going to see a lot of brand safety challenges, but also a lot of fraud more generally. And so, you know, working with fraud partners will be very, very important if you're looking into the CTV space. But I do worry that the long tail will get unfairly targeted by CTV, because it'll be easy to apply fraudulent practices to. So that's a big thing to look at. But I also think CTV is quite inaccessible sometimes. I'm being very negative about this, but CTV is great, right? Love CTV. But we need to really understand all the problems around it. And I think that, who was it? Matt Keating from VDX, again on our predictions, said he wants to get rid of the BOTA, the bonfire. He wants to bonfire of the acronyms. Because I think that it's like programmatic was 10 years ago. People claim to understand it just because they don't want to say they don't understand it. And I think that there's still a lot of misunderstanding around CTV and around exactly what it means and what all the different acronyms mean. You've got OTT, BVOD, SVOD, AVOD, FAST. What is all this? If I'm an advertiser, all I really care about is, how do I target my audience? What does that look like? So wanting to understand who I can work with to target the audience effectively is really, really important. But, you know, we are seeing DTC brands moving to CTV that are coming away from social media, because social media is becoming more challenging, it's becoming very expensive, it's becoming harder to target your audience. CTV could work for brands like that, you know, are purely digital, they're digital first, digital native brands. CTV could be a very, very interesting space for them. I think that is going to be a big area of focus for DTC brands next year. And there's a lot of opportunity for the tech guys and the broadcasters to be working with CTV brands to kind of really, really elevate that. But I think that there's a few challenges. The biggest challenge is the US lens that is placed on CTV. And I moan about this quite a lot because it does annoy me. Firstly, the majority of the CTV market is YouTube. We can't deny that. YouTube makes up the bulk of CTV spending. And we need to remember to talk about them when we're talking about CTV more generally, because they are such a big player in the CTV space. But also, we talk about CTV and we look at the US market. And I don't think there's any other channel in advertising where consumption is so different market to market. Not just consumption, but setup is so different market to market. We need to be looking at CTV, not even regionally, but on a market by market basis. We can't go CTV US versus rest of world, because rest of world is even more complex than the US. Looking at every single Southeast Asia market, looking at China, looking at the UK versus Germany, looking at Latin America, like every single market is so different. And I think that we forget that quite a lot. And we need to really, really look at how, where the opportunities lie on a market by market basis, and not just talk about CTV from a US perspective. That's my rant over. I've got even more to say, but I've run out of steam now.
That's very good, Lindsay.
I'm quite tired after that, actually.
That was a marathon effort, mini marathon effort.
Yeah, I like it.
I think we've covered, both the positives, challenges, pitfalls of the CTV market in there. Lindsay talked about the potential for ad fraud inside CTV and some of the brand safety challenges. How do you see the year shaking out for CTV, and how these challenges can be met?
So a perspective that I was reflecting on after my ad tech meeting in Canberra yesterday, so there's a little spoiler alert, might have been TV related, is that there has apparently been some studies done in the US, and I imagine that, you know, despite I completely agree with what Lindsay just said, we can't look at this, just through US lens and assume that the same thing applies globally. But this piece of research sounded interesting, talking about consumer attitude towards advertising in a streamed environment softening quite a lot because people's budgets are under pressure and they can't necessarily afford the same level of subscriptions that they've been supporting over the last couple of years. With economic times looking to get tighter, you might find households reverting more to consuming ad-supported streaming content, which I think will mean that there is, you know, potentially a larger audience to be targeting if you're a brand and a marketer. That's an opportunity, but along with it becoming an opportunity, there's also, you know, it doesn't doesn't necessarily get us any further away from some of those basic challenges that Lindsay mentioned, like exactly how do you target those audiences and in what environment specifically are you going to be finding them? You know, are we talking about audiences who are consuming those premium ad-supported, options which are new to the market, or actually are we talking about the general trend of people moving from linear viewing to a streamed environment and then starting to consume more streamed content on fast channels? I'd also like to see the death of all of these acronyms because they confuse the F out of me. But the other thing that I thought linked in nicely to that was I also had a really, as ever, my annual chit-chat with the CEO of the IAB down in Australia, Gay Leroy. I had a great coffee with her the other day. One of the things that she mentioned relating to the connected TV market in Australia is they've got big challenges regarding content. So there isn't, broadcasters are not investing in premium content in Australia in the way they've done in previous years because they can't compete with the international premium content providers, the likes of Netflix and others. They just don't have the same budgets. And so content production has been sort of on the go slow for at least the last 12 months. And that means that the supply of inventory just isn't looking as interesting and as exciting. However, the other thing that's happened as a result is the main broadcasters in Australia are now launching more ad-supported fast channels, which might not be fantastic high-quality inventory, but you might actually scoop up big chunks of audience. So I guess my sort of add-on to everything that Lindsay said is I think it's going to be a really interesting year for a definite increase in streamed TV consumption and a higher tolerance for ad-supported stream TV. You know, because if we think of just even like the year before the pandemic, I think most of us associated stream TV with uninterrupted viewing, majority of us. And I just don't think that any of us are going to be watching TV like that for that much longer. We will if we're loaded and we can just keep paying for subscription. But also that would mean that the sub model continues to rise above the ad funded model, and I'm not sure that's going to happen either. I think everything's going to be ad funded.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big changes for CTV that we've seen is the move towards the ad funded, with obviously Disney getting involved, Netflix very much being involved with its pitfalls, as we've seen. Kieran, that was one of your predictions was also CTV based, and you particularly were looking at Apple. So Apple buying into ad tech for its own TV business. How do you think that's going to shake out in 2023?
Before I go on to that, I just want to add one thing to what Lindsay and Rachel said. I think there was a brilliant post by Doug Shapiro. It's a mini essay about the future of content and TV production and how the four horses of apocalypse are sort of converging around monetization and content production and distribution, etc. And I think that, like, I think this might be the year of ChatGPT, OpenAI. It's like absolutely taken everything by storm. And I think what we're going to see is, you know, Rich was talking about it costs a lot of money to do like high production level programming. And I think that AI and sort of the application of artificial intelligence in sort of production is going to bring the cost of that down, which will probably make it easier to run ads against it and make TV sort of like an affordable proposition. Because at the minute, like, a lot of the streaming channels are losing a lot of money. And what we probably have is cost of high level production coming down and the ability to roll that out for people, basically. And I think that could help the broadcasters and others produce content. But then the ads business then becomes like viable, you know, because you don't have to have so many subscriptions to do high production. You can, advertising could support that medium. So I think those things, and this sort of fits into Lindsay's 10-year view. This is not like an immediate 2023 view, but I think this decade's going to see so much innovation around production, which then feeds into the ad business at content production.
I think that will spill over into ad formats as well,
100%,
right?
And platforms as well. Yeah. TikTok will be seen as CTV. Like, I think Lindsay's right about the, and yourself, Rachel, about the alphabet spaghetti mess of acronyms. It's nice, good to get rid of all that. Going to your question, back to your question, John, about Apple. Apple next year are going to be a very interesting ad business. I think they're already interesting, but they're going to be like really interesting. I think there's a couple of things that I think that will affect their attitude to ads. One is the EU ruling that they have to let third-party app stores operate within their system, which might mean that they'll lose revenue in the in the EU. So they may lean more heavily into ads. They've already built up a fairly sizable app ad business on the iOS App Store. Their TV business is going to take off. They've already made a splash with TV, their Apple TV. But next year, they're going to have the MLS rights, the Major League Soccer in the US, which is a big business. You know, the soccer viewership is growing leaps and bounds in the US. And they were looking to make money off that via ads. Now, my feeling about this is that Apple don't have the ad tech DNA to build an enterprise scale ad tech solution that quickly. So they'll either borrow and maybe buy. So I think next year you may see Apple buy a ad tech company to help them run that TV business, the TV ad business. There's a number of candidates on the market.
Just about to say, which ad tech company will they buy?
Well, you could. I mean, ideally, someone who's got an ad server, not necessarily an SSP, but a sort of sell side ad tech business. An ad server would be like obviously FreeWheels with Comcast, and you know, Google have their own GAM. So there's a few people on, there's a few companies on the market that have that sort of scalable ad tech layer. So that was my prediction. I think that Apple might end up buying an ad tech business. Now, I've been told by people internally in Apple that that's not the Apple way, and that they want to kind of stop people seeing it as an ad business. But like at the stage, the horse bolted from the stable. Like it's out and about. People just accept it if they can do ads in a privacy way, first way that people respect, and it's not like, you know, like people don't dislike advertising, it's just the way it's been done. You only have to go to a newspaper site, any newspaper site, well, specific newspaper sites in the UK, and it's like you can't even read the news, there's like 70 ads on the page. Not looking at the Daily Mirror or the Daily Sun. Sorry.
Go on, Lindsay, you were going to say.
Because it is true though, Apple don't buy. Like, that's what Google and Meta do. Mm. So it would be a very interesting step change for them to buy ad tech.
It would be, but Apple need... Not, like, they can't run these ads without an infrastructure player. Like, you know, the ad tech behind a lot of the TV advertising is quite complicated. Like, it's just like you don't get a bunch of engineers and throw people at it, particularly those who've never built ad tech. Like, their own ad tech on their app store is pretty shit. Let's be honest with you. It's not great. And one of my internal Apple birds told me they would be able to move things along quicker if they bought a few pieces here and there. So that's fine, like, functional display, but this is TV advertising. This is big money. This is lots of expectations. I don't necessarily think that Apple have, maybe they're building something, who knows, but I don't think it's going to be robust enough to do what they want to do. I mean, candidates.
I was only going to add that consumers want choice, right? So I think that Apple consumers will, again, be tolerant of advertising in exchange for some options, some choices. And I just think that's going to become more important in 2023.
But I think sports is different because people are almost calibrated to accept advertising in sports events. Like, it's not a, unless you watch the BBC, obviously. But if you're watching ITV or Channel 4 Sports or even Sky, you're used to, in this country anyway, you're used to seeing advertising. And in the US, Jesus, you're watching, you know, American football.
Every 30 seconds.
I mean, half the game is basically advertising.
But also, if you're a Sky or a Virgin customer in this country specifically, the beauty of having Sky or Virgin is that TV doesn't feel so fragmented because I can access every single platform that I've got a subscription to via my Sky platform. And Sky have also just launched Sky Glass. So actually, you know, LG and Samsung are two of the most interesting companies in the space at the moment in terms of what they're doing in the TV space with LG ads and Samsung ads. Sky are going down a similar route with Sky Glass in terms of managing, you know, vertical integration and managing from the TV perspective. But I think that what, I forgot where I was going with this, I think what, if you're a Sky or a Virgin customer, you probably don't watch much live TV or any live TV. Everything I watch is downloaded or recorded. So it either has a different form of ads or I fast forward the ads. If you're watching BVOD, if you're watching ITVX or All Four, you cannot skip the ads. But if you're a Sky or Virgin customer, you're skipping ads all the time. Like, I don't remember the last time I actually watched a TV ad unless I forget to fast forward because I'm doing something on my phone. So our relationship as Sky customers and Virgin customers with ads is actually very, very different from a BVOD or an AVOD customer. And that means that the likes of Netflix for me and Disney for me going ad-funded, I'm going to be like, oh, for Christ's sake, I can't skip them. And I will have a very different relationship with those platforms as a result.
But I mean, you know, if you can afford to pay a subscription tier where you don't have to suffer the ads, then that's okay, right?
Yeah.
It'll be for others that can't. But then, like I said, I think ultimately ads will make its way into virtually every element, potentially, of their business model. That would be my, you know, moving towards the 10-year mark. I just don't see how any of them can continue pumping out that volume of quality content without a big advertising business, which might mean running ads all the way across the platform.
Yeah.
It's still tiered, but you know.
With live sports, which I suppose is a little bit different, Lindsay, because, you know, if you're watching on a, you know, previously we had, but a live sports, you can get
totally
away with a lot of,
yeah, I mean,
like,
I agree with you.
Just like Apple would be leaving money on the table if they said, oh, you can access all you can eat here. Like, the reality is, you look at the TV, you have a sponsor of the game, and then you can have your 3-4 minutes in between the first half, second half, whatever extra time. Like, you know, you're just leaving money on the table. And then my point is, like, for all the goodwill in the world from Apple, you just can't put that together so quickly. Like, you need enterprise ad tech to run that at scale, right? And if you're doing, like, I don't know how many teams are in the MLS, but, like, you know, if you're running at 20, 30 games, consecutive live games with all that advertising, that's a lot of infrastructure. So, you know. So maybe they might go shopping for some ad tech next year.
Yep.
Cool. Well, moving on, and speaking of things that are still being built, our next prediction is from Rachel. Rachel, you have said that the metaverse will take a back seat in 2023 and the focus will become more practical in light of the economic pressures. So this experimental activity that we're seeing will slow and brands are going to start putting their money where they're confident they are going to get tangible results in the metaverse. This was always going to come up. Metaverse is going to be a huge area for next year. So tell me, how do you see this shaking out?
So I think my actual words were metaverse nonsense will take a back seat. And I suppose what I meant by that is the concept of the metaverse and the further sophistication of the concept that we at the moment understand as Web3 may well continue into 2023 and beyond. But I just think it was an obsession of 2022 discussion of the metaverse, what it will look like, how do we, what are going to be the opportunities for marketers and advertisers, what will privacy look like in that environment, what will safety look like in that environment. Now, a lot of that this year was driven also by NFTs and crypto hype, which of course is all very, very quiet at the moment for understandable reasons, not least of all the crypto market being extremely flat. So, of course, that could continue to drive that excitement in concepts like the metaverse and Web3 if the economy picks up next year. Now, I'm no economic forecaster or analyst of recessions, but I think my point is we still just don't quite know where we stand. None of us across global markets. Lots of predictions about the UK already being in recession, the US faring a bit better, UK's recession potentially being much more long term, other global economies doing better, regions like parts of Asia and certainly Southeast Asia not being impacted at all. So I know that it will still be at the forefront of people's minds on the tech side of advertising and marketing and for brands that want to be very future focused. But I just think all the nonsense about about, I don't know, an obsession with what it, with predicting what it will look like and what we'll all be doing and kind of jumping on the bandwagon of the latest hype will slow down, principally because everybody's going to be watching their pennies. And I also think for marketers, you know, their budgets are likely to be reduced next year if they haven't already been told that that's what's going to be happening. But their revenue targets won't be. They'll be expected to be hitting probably similar targets if they're lucky and increased targets if they're unlucky. So they're going to be looking in every corner for return on ad spend and best value for money. And I think that just means they're going to be less experimental. Now, by that, I don't mean that they're not going to be dedicating money to channels that we've been talking about in marketing and advertising as being emerging channels for a number of years, such as CTV, even audio, those sorts of channels. I don't mean that. I mean truly experimental things like advertising in the metaverse. Then there's also, you know, the debate that we had many times throughout the year, which is, what is the metaverse? Well, we're quite potentially moving around it already now in the ways that we transact in a digital environment, in the ways in which, you know, we entertain ourselves and have fun and interact with others while we're doing that, whether that's gaming or other platforms. I just feel like the hype and the nonsense will go away. I feel like everybody will get much more focused on practicalities, and that will mean we won't be, you know, sitting around talking about all the money that Meta is investing in the metaverse. And who knows where that investment's going to go, right? Like, I know obviously analysts and investors were concerned about that. You know, again, I'm no expert on what's happening internally in Meta, but they're betting big on it because they have to, is my view.
Yeah, I mean, they are doubling down on their investment in this with putting 20% of their costs towards the metaverse next year. It's a huge gamble. And yeah, Zuck seems to have decided that that's the play, that metaverse is the thing. Kieron, how do you see the world of the metaverse playing out in 2023?
I tend to agree with Rachel on that narrative of sort of like it not being so hyped. It's difficult to talk about this because it's the alphabetic soup acronyms and terms that really mean nothing. So it's interesting that the head of gaming left Meta, I think last week. Like, the reality is metaverse to me, or sort of virtual reality is the key sort of like. The killer app is gaming, right? That's their draw for many people. Like, Fortnite is a good example of that. Epic is a very good example of that. And really, if Meta were smart, they'd buy a load of gaming houses around the world and start building specific games for that platform. That would be the killer move for them. But unfortunately, they won't be allowed to do any sort of big M&A because the European Union and the American government will just slap it down and say you're not allowed to buy any companies. Like, they're completely hamstrung in that area.
Not so unfortunate from some people's point of view.
Did I say unfortunately? I mean fortunate. Yeah. Fortunately, not unfortunate.
Well, maybe you did
fortunately
say fortunately, for them. And I heard them. Unfortunate. Yeah.
Unfortunately, okay. For them. Yeah. Fortunate for the rest of us. Now, I think that there's been a few I think that we have to kind of like not conflate this sort of like headset world of like immersion versus this virtual reality sort of like you know, the VR AR glasses or VR glasses that both Apple is about to launch and Meta wanted it. So it's this mixed reality that could be quite interesting, that has huge applications for like general use and marketing. I think that's really cool. That would be, there'll be more investment in there. I think that's what I think. But I think you're right. So Rachel is right about the hyper and metaverse. Now, when you bring in the Web3 and NFT stuff, this is where it all gets silly, right? I think like NFT stuff sort of was on a huge hype cycle this year, but there is good application in the market world of NFTs, right? I think what we're going to see next year is investment in sort of utility aspects of it, right? So what works from real practical world examples rather than here's a bloody bunch of tokens and if you give up this data and you give you these tokens, or you know, there'll be real world applications. I don't necessarily know what they are. I think you need to look at our Web3 special next quarter, which will give you more details on that specific area. So what I'd say is there'll be more practical investments next year rather than sort of like, oh, we got to build a fairground in some virtual world, which is a load of nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. As you mentioned, Kieran, we have a piece coming in January on the functional metaverse, which should provide some solid examples of that. Lindsay, your next prediction was around ad spend, and I want to sort of link that into the metaverse a little bit. You said that the economy will be a key player in digital ad spend strategy. Do you think that this move towards a more no-nonsense functional approach, maybe a more cautious approach, goes beyond the metaverse and into kind of the wider spectrum of advertising marketing?
I think that even without the backdrop of global economic challenges, I think it kind of would have anyway. I think that like many things in this industry, and you know, we're guilty of it too, because we exist in this world where we're talking about it all the time. There's a lot of talk about this kind of stuff, but actually behind the scenes, we're looking for meaningful examples where it's actually happening. There aren't that many, and where there are meaningful examples of metaverse being used in advertising, they're by big brands that have money to burn, and those big brands will still have money to burn next year. So if they want to invest in metaverse, understand what it looks like for them as a brand going forward, they'll still do that. But I think that hopefully there'll be a great understanding of, you know, metaverse and Web3 aren't the same thing. And metaverse, Web3, crypto, NFTs, blockchain, they're all kind of connected, but also they're not kind of connected. And the definitions are really, really important. Again, hopefully our features in January of kind of what Web3 is, what metaverse is, will help clear that up, because most people don't understand what it means. I'm not saying I do, because I don't think I do either. I'm looking forward to our features next month to understand what it means. But I think that in terms of the backdrop of the economy in the metaverse, I don't see a lot more investment happening from brands that wouldn't otherwise have invested in it. I think that those brands were never going to in the first place. And we won't see that for another 5-10 years, in my opinion.
Yeah, still one that's going to be in the thoughts, but yet to kind of find a practical use, I suppose.
I mean, I think Lindsay raises a good point, right? All of those terms we've been sort of using interchangeably throughout the year to describe this environment, sort of broadly understood as the metaverse, as I said earlier on too. I just think there's definitely going to be further advancements across all of those fields, blockchain, NFTs, even crypto is going to change next year. We'll see what happens when markets settle down a little bit. Web3 will continue to evolve. It's just, like I said, it's the nonsensey stuff. It's going to go away. People are going to be focusing on getting their jobs done, making the numbers stack up. It'll be a bit more of a survival environment. I'm not saying it'll only be that, but it'll be a bit more characterized by that thinking, I think.
Yeah, I think that the real battle next year between Apple and Meta around this VR, AR stuff. I know that's like, again, we're kind of overlapping sort of terms here that really don't relate to this, right? So, you know, but that's where, you know, Meta want to be. They want to own the VR/metaverse space. That's what they want to do, headsets, etc. The problem they have is like, Apple own the rails, so they can integrate really well with the phone and make that work together. So I think hardware will be an interesting one, and I think that's where brands might try and put money to work, building sort of specific applications for that, and agencies putting money into that. So check that one out. I think that would be a really hot area next year.
Cool, one to keep an eye on for certain. Another big area moving on is going to be, well, we've seen the rise of TikTok over the last year. Kieran, this is one of your punchier predictions here, more specific ones. You have gone for ByteDance to spin out TikTok and Sheryl Sandberg to be the new CEO. And then following on from that, TikTok doing a blockbuster IPO in early 2024. Can you explain your thinking behind that one?
Right.
Kieran loves a blockbuster prediction. Let's just start with that.
Yeah, because
he's gotten one right in 12 years, and that was great fun, I have to say. That was the AppNexus prediction.
I think the probability of this happening is quite high.
How many steins or bottles of rosé do you think it's going to be?
I think it depends how many steins you've drank beforehand. If you drank it's four. If you drank none, it's probably one and a half. But I'll tell you my thinking around this, right? First of all, it's like TikTok, like rightly or wrongly, are being targeted by the American government over their relationship with China and the ability for China to access US data, right, on users. Whether, like, I don't know how much, you know, segmentation the Chinese government can get from, like, just dancing people and silly stunts and what they're watching. But there is a fear in the US that Chinese agencies are accessing this data, right? So there is a momentum developing now at the Senate and the Congress in the US, bipartisan support for a bill to ban TikTok outright. Now, if TikTok was smart, and they should be smart, they'll get ahead of this and they'll spin that non-Chinese entity as a separate business, like proper firewalls between them, servers sitting in Singapore, engineers not in China, data is stored not in China, the Chinese entity can't access it. I think that's probably likely to happen if TikTok feel that, or if ByteDance feel that they're getting close to the wire here. Like, an outright ban in the US would be a disaster for that company, 112 million users per month. It's a huge part of their business. So there's probably a plan to put something in place where they'll spin it out. It's a separate business. Now, Sheryl Sandberg has been out of work for a while. She's kind of like rebuilding her reputation. What better way to build a reputation than to take a company like TikTok, which essentially is a decent app in many ways, is a lot better than the, you know, Facebook and Instagram sort of like entities which were based on the worst aspects of humanity. I think that TikTok for many is more about consumption and entertainment than the actual sort of like the worst aspects of that Facebook and Instagram sort of brought out. Like, I know they started off as pretty benign platforms, but they've caused so much political disorder and so many mental health issues, you know, teen suicides, loneliness, isolation, etc., etc. The list just goes on and on and on. So I think she could come out of retirement, be the CEO of this new entity, and then there will be an amazing IPO in 2024. Because, like, you know, for all that Google's doing around Reels and YouTube's sort of like TikTok clone and Instagram's TikTok clone, they just can't beat the TikTok app. It just is an absolute monster. So, like, I think it would be sensible to do this. And it's not because I'm saying that, you know, having an app in China is wrong. I'm not. I'm like, I, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not sure how much China can get from those specific data points. But it's just the geopolitical issues right now. It would be just prudent for them to do it. And I think it would be a win-win situation for the parent company in China and the investors outside it. And I think the users as a whole. So I think that's it's a punchy prediction. But who knows what could happen in 2023? Because, like, 2022 has been an absolute shit show. So it's not out of the realms of possibility.
Yeah.
No, Lindsay, do you think, you know, in terms of with all the regulatory things going on around TikTok in the States in particular, do you think ByteDance spinning out TikTok as an act of self-preservation, do you think that makes sense? Do you think Kieran's on the money here?
I do think it makes, whether Kieran's on the money or not is a different question entirely, frankly. I do think it makes sense because China need to do something. They need to show that TikTok is a separate entity from ByteDance. And, you know, if there's ever any doubt from any of these markets and China want to be seen as still a global player that is playing ball with these countries, which they don't really care about much recently, then they need to do something to break it out. They're not going to stop the rise of TikTok. Like, the rise of TikTok will continue, and I think that even if US did ban TikTok, it would still just grow and grow and grow in every other market anyway. Like, what difference would it really make? Would it stop people using it? I don't know. I don't think it really, really would much. It would just, I guess, you know, the likes of Mark Zuckerberg would be delighted because it would mean people would use Instagram more, because Instagram at the moment is the poor man's TikTok, and everything everyone publishes on Instagram, on TikTok, they do it on Instagram as well because they feel they probably should do for their other followers. But TikTok really is the platform of choice at the moment for a lot of these creators and influencers. So from that perspective, I find it very interesting. But I think that something needs to happen, and what needs to happen is not TikTok being banned by US and potentially other markets as well.
Yeah, it could be obviously India have banned TikTok. I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that happened. The EU could follow suit TikTok with the US and say we're banning TikTok as well. Like, the problem with TikTok the problem with TikTok being owned by ByteDance, what happens if something happens? What happens if there's political problems in Taiwan or something else happens? Like, it's in the crosshairs of this damage.
I just can't imagine a world where a country like the US bans a massive communication platform and tool, because even if their reasoning for doing that is very clearly articulated and it's about protecting users' privacy and data because we don't trust the Chinese, it still just seems like such a dramatic step. You know, it will be considered censorship of some form or another, and I just can't imagine a moment when that happens. That doesn't mean that it won't happen. Of course, so many unimaginable things have happened over the last, like, 10 years. So, you know, this could be another one. But there's something else in this too that I find a bit contradictory though as well, which is this. I'm not disputing per se, because you know, I can easily believe it, and also I'm no expert in this field. But the whole idea that, you know, it's unacceptable for Chinese agencies to have access to people's to TikTok's user data, I can see why that's annoying. But Facebook do the exact same thing for every single user across borders. That's what the EU were fighting with them about. And in fact, I don't know how that case came to a conclusion, but it's exactly the same thing. There was effectively a clause in the way in which Facebook managed its data that anyone in the EU, despite whatever data privacy controls they put in place in their Facebook and Instagram accounts, Facebook agents could access that data. Sorry, US agents could access that data if they requested it from Facebook for international security purposes. Isn't that the same thing?
Yeah. To add to that, I think there's an element of US exceptionalism here, like that the US is taking action against a company not based in the US that is just kicking the crap out of its competitors, right? First time it's happened I suppose the first time it's ever happened, really, that you have this Chinese company that's completely eclipsed the likes of Meta and Google in building this insanely successful and popular app. There's an element of that, and I can see that. I think the American paranoia is misplaced in some respects, to Rachel's point, because the NSA had backdoors into Facebook and other platforms that basically were just like scooping up data on Europeans that was against the law. This is the whole digital shield thing that was enacted recently, the sharing of data between Europe and the US. I can see both sides of this.
But that's fine, because that's for national security, and banning TikTok is also for national security. I think it just highlights the general fear that still exists around China. China still is this great unknown, and nobody knows how to really deal with China. And that, I think, is the crux of this issue.
Exactly, and we don't trust them is the crux of the issue. And that may well be for very good reasons. You know, I'm not an MI5 agent or MI6 agent, whichever one, I forget which one's the international agency. But, you know, we don't know the details of why there are so many concerns. I can well believe that they're legitimate. But I can also, I don't know, there is just something a little contradictory in this, and there is something that goes beyond doing something in the interest of citizens for international security because it is really, it would really be interfering with something that people use on a day-to-day basis. And I guess we just haven't come across that in our lifetime, right?
So it feels a bit anti-American being anti-capitalist.
Yeah, anti-democratic. Like, yeah, also. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sheryl Sandberg.
Sandberg.
Yes. Sheryl Sandberg. Giving her she a name is the long lost of Sheryl Sandberg.
Sheryl Sandberg.
She's coming back. She's returning to the world of ad tech in 2023. You heard it here first. Kieron, your final prediction was that 2023 will be the year of the utility publisher. We are seeing a growing narrative around the fact that everything is an advert. Tell us how you see that advancing. Why will it be the year of the utility publisher?
So there was a really good stat from, I can't remember where I was saying it this week, saying that the Meta and Google's share of the market in the US has declined because of the growth of all these new walled gardens like Walmart and Kroger's, et cetera, et cetera. I think this is a good thing for our industry, is that we're going to see loads, we're already seeing it, loads of sort of mini walled gardens like the likes of Uber, who have spun up a ad business. Now, when I talk about utility publisher, John, I'm really saying is, as a publisher, generally advertising is your first business, right? A utility publisher would have other business. So obviously Uber, is a taxi service plus a delivery service plus a bunch of other stuff. And ads is just a secondary business, right? So, but they have incredibly rich first party data. You know, there's some really interesting stuff they can do for their own, for the people who are actually listing on Uber, like so direct to advertiser, obviously, and then to agencies. So what we're seeing is, like, there's been a couple of narratives saying everybody's an ad network. That's an incorrect statement, because an ad network is effectively a third party, a middleman or middle woman that kind of aggregates third party sites and builds it into sort of like bundles, so they can target against it, whether it's programmatic or sort of just a tag on page, and then they take an IO or a PG or whatever from the agency and run the campaigns on their behalf and take a margin off the back of that. These are more like walled gardens. A lot of them would have their own direct sales teams. But I see more of this happening. I suppose this feeds into the retail media piece. You know, its growth trajectory this year is going to be very high versus the rest of the industry. You know, like, I think the projected growth rates is, you know, was in the 20-30% next year. So that's who I also see as utility publishers, because, you know, Tesco's just there to sell cornflakes and other stuff. It's not there to deliver ads. So
do you think of e-com platforms as utility publishers under this definition?
Yes, I do.
So your Lazadas and your Amazons, frankly, and your
Amazon makes so much bloody money from ads, it's hard to know where
the line is. Amazon exists at every level, every layer of this.
Amazon exists in some way. Such a big part of the business that they're not really a utility publisher in that respect. Yeah. But what mini walled gardens, and what it means is that it means that there's more opportunity for buyers. It means that they don't necessarily have to pile money into the likes of Meta and Google. I mean, Google's still going to take a big share because with this goes back to deprecation of IDs and cookies, and I know, you know, obviously that was 2022, but the same thing applies next year. Is like, these guys have rich data sources, like first party data. They have users using the app on a daily basis. I don't know how many people use it. And by the way, Deliveroo have an ad business as well, which I didn't realize. They have an ad business. So you're going to see a load of these. As if, it's fragmentation. It's not really, because they're either taking money away from Meta and Google on the mid to long tail, which is kind of where they're taking money from like most of the business, and then they'll go to the agency and take more money that way. I think this is good for our industry because it means we're taking more money away from those big duopolies. It means that ad tech is going to be servicing more businesses. It's good for ad tech because there's more clients, there's more opportunity. And I think it's good for, you know, I think it's good for consumers as well in the long run, right? The Uber's serving up relevant ads. And like, I was told by some of Uber that I think it's like 50% of people who go onto their app don't know what they're ordering. You know, like they open the app and they go, what am I going to order? So it sort of like helps that sort of user experience as well. So I think this will be a continuing trend next year. I think more people are going to lean into ads. Fragmentation is going to increase. And it's good because I think the big dogs are going to squeeze more. I think, you know, Meta have so many headwinds coming at them in terms of, like, you know, loss of the signal, whether that's IDFA and other signals that make sort of UGC content a little less desirable. Feeds back into Lindsay's point about CTV picking up a lot of that spend as well. You could argue some of them are utility publishers as well because they're not, you know, subscriptions is their first business, Netflix, etc. So you're going to see more of that. It could be, you know, the year of the mini walled garden, if you will.
Nice. Rachel, do you think that money flowing away from the duopoly, do you see that as something that's going to happen over the next 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, not just because we like to bang on about how annoying it is that they've dominated for so long and we're, you know, big fans of supporting independent ad tech. But I also think what's behind this is getting better return on ad spend for brands and marketers, right? And we know that they're not really reaching the audiences that they need to be reaching in those environments anyway at the moment. And so anything that gives them an opportunity to go to other environments to find those audiences might be a better result for them. Like Kieran says, it's good for the industry. It's good for tech innovation. I think it makes it more interesting, right? I was just chatting with a contact in Singapore earlier on today, who will remain unnamed, but told me that, for example, platforms like Lazada are resulting in 10 times return on ad spend over Google and Facebook for some brands and advertisers in that region. And his point of view was, why wouldn't you put your budgets there? Why would you waste your budgets in these other environments? So I think those other mini walled gardens are becoming really compelling offerings. And in an environment where your budgets are more challenged as a brand or a marketer, but like I said, your targets are the same, if not bigger, then you're going to go to places where you think you can get a real result. So, yeah, I think it could definitely happen. And just from a business model point of view, so let's think about the utility publishers themselves. Smart move, right? You've always got any good business model, particularly in a digital environment, you've got to have more than one way to make money. So diversifying that offering is absolutely the way to go.
Yeah. Lindsay, what do you think about this?
I think that I completely agree with everything that Rachel and Kieran have said. And I think that the interesting thing is the fragmentation piece, because creating all these walled gardens will create more fragmentation, which could then make it harder for buyers, but also makes it more interesting for buyers, because buyers need to step out of Google and go and look for other inventory and look for other ways of targeting their consumers in more interesting ways. And the retail media aspect of this I do find interesting. I think particularly because Amazon have been done under the DMA of kind of promoting their own stuff in the past, and I think that becomes interesting for the likes of grocers in the world. Like, you know, not so common in many markets around the world, but in the UK it's very common for grocers like Tesco and Sainsbury's to have their own brand stuff. So will they fall foul of trying to promote their own brand stuff? Because the thing about utility publishers would make it interesting if they have a marketing team trying to promote their products and sell their products, and then they have the publisher side of this arm trying to monetize their inventory, and there will be overlap and there will be crossover, and that I think we've seen it a lot in gaming already, and kind of how there's the potential cannibalization there when it comes to advertising versus monetization. And I'm interested in how that will work from a utility publisher perspective, and kind of how they what agreements are made in terms of how they work together. Do they work together? Are they completely separate entities? Is there any kind of crossover there? And I think that the conversations there about how they understand what each other is doing for business growth will be very interesting, as collaboration's required, but not so that they can eat their own lunch or mark their own homework. And that I think will be interesting from a regulatory perspective as well going forwards.
Can I just add one last thing there? I think this is really good for agencies, because if you've seen what's happened at the minute
with the fragmentation piece,
yeah,
right?
If you see what's happened with Meta and Google at the minute, both of them are pushing their AI power thing, Performance Max and Advantage Plus. You might have seen this sort of written about elsewhere, but they're AI-powered solutions that disintermediate the agency, right, from the planning perspective, measurement perspective, and the verification perspective. So actually having these other options, to Lindsay's point and the fragmentation, Rachel's point, is that you allow agencies to be still in control. So instead of like pumping it through a black box arbitrage solution, and by the way, Google's Performance X, you have, Max, you have nowhere where that's running high. They run that through YouTube, Maps, GDN, 2 million sites. It could be any site. It's UGC content on YouTube. You have no way to target, no way to verify media, no way to kind of benchmark brand safety. It's a proper sausage factory. Like, it's like you have no idea what's in there. Like, but output, the output's performance, boop. But it's Google performance, last click attribution. What that means, John, is just retarget everything. So screws up your entire like attribution model. But I think this is why I think the more these, more fragmentation is good for agencies, because the more options they have to buy.
It will be an interesting one to keep an eye on for certain. We are running out of time a little bit, but we've got one more of the main predictions to get through. And it's one that I really, really enjoyed. Rachel, this was your final one. And it was, reducing the carbon footprint of digital advertising will become an industry obsession in 2023. But what will separate the talkers from the doers? A transparent and independently verified tool which measures emissions and those who can link this activity to something practical like supply path optimization and demand path optimization. So we've heard a lot about sustainability and ESG over the last year, but as you mentioned, it's been seemingly a lot of chat, and it's time to see action. Do you see this as the thing that's going to bring that forward this year?
I don't know whether 2023 and everything that happens in it will result in action under this sort of heading, but I think that we'll be all pushed to start to put some action behind the words that we were all very enthusiastically sharing this year. So I just think that, you know, there isn't one single person that I've spoken to, even in regions where we know environmental sustainability isn't as much of a hot topic as it is in European markets and US markets. I just think it's going to be something that everybody in marketing and advertising will be talking about. But the key thing here will be what are you doing about it? And what is the industry doing about it? And what are we as a group of professionals, you know, doing about it collectively? So, yeah, I mean, you know, that was a summary really of exactly what I think. I think the key things will be, what are the measurement tools that people are using to measure their carbon emissions? What actually are those measurement tools? What is the methodology behind those measurement tools? It cannot be just a, you know, it can't just be one measurement tool that's been rolled out into the market that everybody says is great. We need a little bit more transparency around that. And then following on from that, what are you actually going to, what practical actions can you control and take forward from here onwards? There's probably a whole load of them, but the obvious sort of opener to me is the natural link between reducing the carbon emissions of advertising and making sure that your route from ad to the website is involves as few intermediaries as possible, and those intermediaries have got some kind of reasonable carbon credentials. That seems like a practical place to start.
Yeah, I think so. Lindsay, you and I got into the weeds about this a little bit with Chiesa Lamore on the podcast a few weeks ago, in terms of even like the smallest practical changes that can be made to help the industry with their environmental impact. Do you think that 2023 is the year that we have to start seeing these, maybe some standardization in targets, practical changes? What do you think?
Yeah, I think standardization will be key for us to get anywhere. Like we're trying to do at a kind of government level, like a, you know, on a global level, we need to have targets that everyone agrees to and everyone thinks is achievable. If they're not achievable, people will go, well, I can't achieve that, so I'm not going to bother. But I think that when it comes to reducing the carbon footprint in advertising, I think the motives might not be standardized or might not be leveled out, but I think the outcomes could be the same. I think that the economy will force a lot of reflection on where investment is going, how it's going. As a result, there'll be a levelling up in SPO on the buy side and DPO on the publisher side as well. I consider that too. They will be looking much more closely at who they work with, how efficient those partners are, as a way of making sure that they are using their budget and their ad spend efficiently. That in turn will hopefully have a positive impact on their carbon footprint. And it is not that much further a step to look more closely at who you're working with from a carbon emissions and carbon footprint perspective. So not just if they're efficient from a spend perspective, but also if they're able to measure emissions, how they're measuring emissions, and all the basically everything that Rachel said. And I think that if you're starting with one thing, which is because obviously ultimately for all big companies, We can't ignore the fact it's ultimately going to always be about the bottom line. The bottom line is the most important thing here. But actually, if you can still achieve kind of a solid, positive, profitable bottom line while reducing carbon emissions, that's going to be something that everyone's interested in. They're not going to want to do it if it's going to lose them money because these are businesses. They have stakeholders, and the big challenge with a lot of these brands is shareholder management becomes the biggest challenge. Because if you're losing your shareholders' money in an effort to try to reduce your carbon emissions, then you're in trouble. So how can you max out the boat? And that's where technology will have to play a massive, massive role in helping these companies do it efficiently and explaining to shareholders why how important that is.
Yeah. Kieran, do you see this as becoming a more practically addressed issue in 2023?
Sustainability is a hot topic for brands. They obviously want to be seen to be doing something to protect the planet and help combat climate change. And obviously all the studies have come out about the amount of emissions that advertising, online advertising is causing. I agree with both Lindsay and Rachel LeBaron. Just practical steps would be implement robust SPO. Do you really need that many hops in the sort of ad chain? Transparency on the measurement of sort of carbon footprint would be necessary as well. I think we need a few more players in that space, and we will see more companies in that space. I also want to sort of address the elephant in the room and who's going to pay for this? Is this a publisher tax now that people have to endure, or will it be something that brands will pay for?
That's a big question, because it can't be that. We can't go back to that again. We've come away from there's been so much work on ad tech tax over the past 10 years. We've come away from that being something that the publisher has to endure and get even fewer cents of a dollar or pence of a pound or whatever currency we're using. We can't go back to that route again for the sake of reducing carbon emissions, because the publisher again will always lose. No.
Yeah, I totally agree. Rich.
But someone's got to pay for it.
Well, yeah, exactly. All I was going to say, and so then I feel like the emphasis will really heavily be on what tech players are doing to produce tech tools and solutions that are low emission, right? And, if there's enough of those in the marketplace that both publishers and buyers and brands and agencies can choose from, then great, problem solved. But part of me, the argument might be for those who are not, terribly energy efficient, how do they re-engineer their business models? What happens to their bottom lines? And I think the conversation around responsibility, who in the industry takes responsibility for all of this, the money, i.e. who pays for it, but also morally who's responsible for this, will be a tricky one.
My biggest concern is that this is another money grab situation, layering more tax into the system and trying to cover it off as being sort of good for the planet, just classic greenwashing, just to make a few more pence and pounds. And be another intermediary to make money. I find that distasteful.
And it can't be that.
No.
100%. It can't be that. And I'm sort of hoping that there's enough people out there with loud enough voices in the industry that won't be acceptable, right? And remembering that, I don't think progress under the banner of reducing the carbon footprint of digital advertising means we've solved it in 2023. I think it means taking steps, doing things differently, and proving that you are doing these things, not just talking about them, but, and that's why one of the most important things to start with is a transparent measurement system that everybody understands and that is also, to some extent using some universal principles that can be applied across businesses, and then to be able to demonstrate progress against that. If you look at carbon emission reduction targets that the government has had, I'm not talking just at a central government level that gets spoken about at globally at, you know, global carbon emission, you know, reduction summits. I'm talking also just at local government level. Every single council in the UK has got carbon reduction emissions, and those targets may have felt a long way away, you know, back when I used to work in the public sector 12 years ago, but they'll have actually made some real progress towards meeting those in the intervening 12 years. And that's another thing, is I'm not quite sure that everyone in the advertising industry understands how painstakingly challenging and not terribly speedy this task could be. Some of it, yes, some of it could be done quickly, but a lot of it might not be the sort of stuff that we can get on top of immediately. But we have to do it still. We have to do it. And we have to do it from a morally appropriate point of view, not from a, oh, this might be a new way, a new bandwagon I can jump on to make a bit of cash.
My view is that this should be open sourced, or it should be like, you know, something given to people to make sure that, and it's like almost like a certification, if you will. And I don't know how you build that into tech layer, but like maybe that's a standard the IAB should think about bringing together. IAB Tech Lab, I hope you're listening. That would be a really cool thing to do. I don't really want to see another layer of ad tax in there, because ultimately it's not the brands or agencies to pay, it's the publishers, and I think that's wrong.
Agreed.
Yeah,
definitely agreed. Let's not make 2023 even harder year for publishers.
Yeah, well, on that surreal note, that's all we have time for the Exchange Wire Predictions podcast. I hope you've enjoyed that. There's a lot more content around predictions from the industry on exchangewire.com. So Lindsay, Rachel, Kieran, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
We are on our Christmas break next week. Exchange Wire will not be sending out our normal podcast next Friday. So thank you very much for listening throughout 2022, and looking forward to bringing you more news analysis in 2023. Thank you very much for listening.